From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast. I'm Star Sports Editor Ryan Finley, joined today by Greg Hansen, GH. The Arizona Wildcats just came back from UTEP. I heard that when you guys got off the freeway here in Tucson, you actually got out of the car and kissed the ground. Is that true?
If you've been to El Paso and didn't just drive through, you know it's about as bleak as you can get in America, I think.
Wow. What I think is so crazy about the state of Texas, right, is you guys drove, what, 5 hours?
Yeah.
To get to El Paso. You'd have to drive another 10 to get through the state of Texas?
Is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah.
It's never ending. You know, all the way across New Mexico is the same, too.
Yeah.
And all the way across Arizona is the same, too.
Sure, sure. There's just not a whole lot. Where'd you guys stop? Was it Deming on the way?
In Deming, Alicia's House of Pies.
Okay. Did you have pie?
I did. Key lime pie. And that was good. Mm-hmm. It was a real, real unique place.
Okay. And then coming back, you guys stopped at Mexican food and...
Las Cruces, first class.
Yeah, what'd you get?
I had a taco plate. Michael and Zach had more exotic adventures.
The people subscribe to the podcast because they want to know what Greg Hansen orders when he goes out for Mexican food. I'm telling you. Anything on tap? You weren't driving.
It was daytime.
Daytime. You'd be a really bad passenger if you started had a couple drinks, started dozing in the back seat on the way home.
Yeah.
Arizona turns its the calendar. What am I saying? Arizona's now focusing on Utah. They'll play the Utes here Friday night. Another one of those wonderful Friday night football games. We were talking before we went on air, and I half jokingly asked you this, but it's true. Since when did Utah leapfrog Arizona in the Pac-12 power rankings?
Is there a term for leapfrogging backward?
No.
I think that's what happened. Arizona leaped backward over Utah and Colorado.
So it's more what Arizona has not done and less about what Colorado and Utah have done?
Colorado's done a ton.
Right.
Utah, to me, is about the same as it was in 2005. They just stayed good.
Mm-hmm.
And Arizona and ASU have backslid. Is that a term?
That is absolutely a term.
And did anybody see that coming?
Nope, I didn't, especially ASU. Yeah. I mean, I will say this. ASU fans have been selling this for 50 years. Yeah. But it's true. There may not be a bigger sleeping giant in all of college sports ASU. What is the difference between ASU and Ohio State in terms of
community support?
Okay. But giant schools, renovated stadiums. I'm not comparing Sun Devil Stadium in Ohio State. If you're a Los Angeles kid and you don't go to USC, wouldn't it stand to reason that ASU would be a better fit than Oregon or Washington?
You know, I probably wouldn't agree with that, no.
Okay.
Because ASU hasn't been steadily good in football since the 70s.
Right.
That's 40 years.
And is it a football school simply because it hasn't been good in anything else?
Is it a football school?
Well, you got to be something, don't you?
It's a golf school. They lead the Pro Tour this year in money won.
Well, John Rahm.
Yeah.
John Rahm's very, very good. Okay, back to Utah. Utah, I mean, when they first came into the league, Utah and Colorado, I thought, and maybe you disagreed with me, that you were getting Utah for basketball and Colorado for football. And for a while, you got the opposite. Colorado won a Pac-12 championship in basketball, and Utah was consistently 7-5, 8-4, Las Vegas Bowl every year since they got in. What makes Utah more appealing, or what was the moment in which Utah started getting guys and winning games that Arizona couldn't get?
That moment was 2002. Alex Smith, out of Helix High School in San Diego, was not recruited by Arizona.
Go Scotties. Go ahead.
Yes. Utah recruited him.
Yeah.
And they went, 12-0 twice?
Yep.
Or close to 12-0
twice. Urban Meyer won a Fiesta Bowl.
And the thing that makes it so funny in retrospect is Alex Smith comes from the greatest pipeline in U of A football history. Arizona didn't. John Makovic didn't recruit him. He recruited Chris Huebner instead.
That's right. And name an Arizona safety who you think has been pretty good over the years, and he probably went to Helix High. I mean, Jeff Hammerschmidt, Chuck Cecil, Alan Durden.
Brandon Sanders. David Phipp.
Yep. We could talk. This is a separate podcast, I think. We could talk forever. Jarvie Wooster went to La Jolla High. You could build an Arizona all-time roster out of guys from San Diego, and you'd be pretty darn good. The Cactus Comet, Art Lupino, didn't stumble in here from Phoenix. He went to La Jolla High overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And Utah, it seems, whether it is recruiting San Diego area kids or Oceanside kids, which means Polynesian kids, has kicked Arizona's butt in that department in the last 5-7 years.
Kyle Whittingham, who I think is a really strong coach, could coach anywhere.
Strong coach because he wears tiny shirts that shows off his muscles?
You know, he's gained a few pounds this year, I noticed. But anyway, he was, of all the coaches in college football, no one was in the right place at the right time more than Kyle Whittingham.
Okay.
Because when he became head coach after Urban Meyer, the Polynesian culture in the Salt Lake area for football players went off the charts. Utah has 32 Polynesian players. They're not all difference makers, but they have enough who are. Arizona has 2 Polynesian players. And in the 90s, Arizona led the league in Polynesian players. But they're right there in Utah's backyard. Look at their roster.
Yeah.
They drive 6 miles to get starting defensive linemen who you can't find anywhere unless you're Ohio State.
Sure.
Utah gets those guys in their home turf, and now they've surpassed BYU. That's why BYU was ahead of the curve for so many years. They had Polynesian players.
Sure.
It was your own special recruiting turf. And now Utah owns it.
What's so interesting to me is that what made Utah so... I think what really helped Utah recruit those Polynesian players was an assistant by the name of Kalani Sitake.
Oh, yeah.
Who then left Utah, remember, for Oregon State, and was there for like a year. And then left Oregon State to become the head coach at BYU. So BYU clearly knows that it's important to get Polynesian recruits. Otherwise, they would not have put a Polynesian man in one of the most high-profile coaching positions in America.
But in the interim there, Utah jumped ahead of BYU in Polynesian recruiting and all recruiting because BYU is no longer in a league. It's drifting off somewhere.
Right.
And Utah gets all this money to come into the Pac-12, and they're the new pretty girl on the block. And Kyle Whittingham has been good enough defensively to take advantage of it. They only have 45,000 seats in the stadium, so every game is sold out. It seems then like they are the most popular event other than the Utah Jazz in the state. And, man, what a collision of positive events for Utah.
We've been there a couple, 3 times together for football games. And maybe it's the time of year that we go. It's always like late October. The weather's cold, but not too cold. There's snow on the mountains. There's a little magic to that place that maybe I would not have expected. You can feel it a little bit on game day there. There's a football history and a tradition of winning there that outsiders know nothing about.
But the funny part is Utah wasn't good in football until 2005.
Right.
They were never good. Utah State beat them up.
Right.
BYU dominated them. I mean, embarrassed them. And now Utah's beat them 7 straight. All timed with Alex Smith and then the jump to the Pac-12 and Kyle Whittingham being a good hire. They kept him on. He turned down. BYU tried to hire him about, 6 years ago. He turned it down to stay, even though he's from Provo. Stayed at Utah. He surrounded himself. Look at their staff directory in football. 7 Polynesian guys.
Really?
On the coaching staff and in the operations department and in their recruiting staff.
How many Polynesian players are on their roster?
32.
How many Polynesian players are on Arizona's roster?
2.
As we talk about the reboot of Arizona football, whether that means Rich Rodriguez is starting from scratch or whether that means Rich Rodriguez is gone and somebody else starts from scratch, I think one of the number one things they must address is getting a foothold either among Polynesian players or in Texas. And it seems like they're at least starting to talk about making gains.
Starting but in the 6th season?
But you can't start to talk about it. I mean, right now, Arizona's two players are Michael Elatise on the offensive line.
And
Sione Taufo-Mahema on the defensive line. Neither of them are contributing right now. They went hard to get Elatise out of Hawaii.
He was a big. He was their biggest get in what?
Right. Five years? Yeah. And how do you get more? Is it? Are we overgeneralizing by saying Polynesian kids will only come play for Polynesian coaches?
And there's a lot of truth to that. Maybe not Polynesian coaches, but there's got to be a culture within the program.
Right.
There's got to be eight guys to hang out with.
Because nobody has the history of Polynesian football players. I mean, maybe outside of USC. No team in the West has as deep a history of Polynesian players as Arizona does. Maybe BYU.
Oh, BYU by far number one. Mm-hmm. Historically, now Utah is the clear leader. Mm-hmm. But now everybody hits. Joe Salavea populated Washington State's good teams now with about five really prime Polynesian guys. Mm-hmm. Oregon's had them. Mm-hmm. Washington's had them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stanford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Toilolo.
Yeah.
He's from Helix High School.
Helix High School, San Diego, California. Levine Toilolo, now with the, do you know this?
Buccaneers? Panthers?
Falcons.
Falcons, yeah.
Falcons. Southern, you had the South and the color right. This is a politically incorrect question to ask, Greg, so please save my butt. How much of that has to do with the LDS Church in terms of the Polynesian kids who primarily live in the Salt Lake City area? Is it fair to say many of them are Mormon?
Huge.
Okay. But Utah, if we're drawing it up, how much of an LDS... how many coaches on the Utah staff are LDS?
Or
is
that
strictly,
I don't know.
Is it, if you're an LDS kid, do you grow up dreaming of playing for BYU or for Utah or both?
It used to be strictly BYU. You
know, right.
But now Utah has taken the lead. I mean, clearly taken the lead.
Right.
You know, Whittingham is an active member of the Mormon Church.
He is.
Okay. His son went on a mission. He's had many positions in the LDS Church. And it's huge. Yeah. I mean, I grew up there. I know. Mm-hmm. Outsiders don't know.
Right.
It's not as great as it was in 1975, but it's still big.
Well, and there's a misconception out there that, like it is with Catholics in Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Not all Catholics grow up dreaming of playing at Notre Dame. Not all Mormons grow up dreaming of playing at BYU. And if we're just playing a numbers game, there are so many good LDS high school football players, they can't all play at BYU, so they have to spill out somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And Utah's taking advantage of it.
I mean, Salt Lake City, when I grew up there and maybe 10 to 15 years afterward, Utah was no good in football because they didn't have a recruiting turf.
Right.
They got the second and third picks after the Pac-10 in Southern California. It all changed because now they don't have to go into Southern California so much. They can recruit 50% of their roster in Salt Lake City, the greater Salt Lake City area.
Right.
And that's an advantage no one saw coming. I didn't see it coming, and I grew up there.
And it's a perpetual motion machine almost. The more you win, the easier it's going to be to get kids.
Oh.
The more kids you get, the easier it's going to be to win. I mean, this is...
And it's happening there.
It's happening there. How does Arizona... How do you compete with that?
That's a good question, and my answer is you don't.
Okay.
Because Arizona, the recruiting... I mean, Arizona doesn't have a market.
Mm-hmm.
There are maybe two Tucson Pac-12 level players a year if you're lucky. And you can get maybe three out of Phoenix that are good enough. 5 to 6 from the state in 1 year. That's not enough. I mean, Utah can get 16 in a year from right down the street. Mm-hmm. That's why they're good and they're going to stay good, I think.
Is it important, though? I mean, if we're saying here that Utah is getting all the good Polynesian players out of, say, Salt Lake City or out of Utah, right? Are there enough left over for Arizona, if they wanted to rededicate themselves to recruiting those kinds of players, are there enough left over for Arizona to succeed with them?
If you could get 2 or 3 a year, it would make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example. Pima College last year had an offensive lineman, Pima College,
mm-hmm.
named Jordan Agassiva.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Utah. He starts at right guard his first year there. He was all ACC at Pima College. Arizona didn't recruit him.
Wow.
They didn't have an immediate need there.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was still, Arizona didn't recruit a Pac-12 level player at Pima College.
To me, what's so interesting about college football, now we're going to step back. We're going to go 20,000 foot view here, is how many compelling subcultures there are on a roster of 100 kids. to do it right, if you're a school like Arizona, you can't just decide to start getting Texas kids, because you're not going to get all the Texas kids you want. You can't just decide all of a sudden to start recruiting Polynesian kids. You can't just decide all of a sudden to start recruiting the Inland Empire or San Diego or Helix High School. You need like 10 different groups, and you need to be pulling two, three guys every year from that. And the way to get more kids from those groups is to have success with the guys who you bring in from there previously. Does that make any sense?
That's the way it goes.
How do you do that with a staff? I mean, it's almost like you need to assemble a staff full of people from those different subcultures and have 10 guys on your staff, and one guy is Polynesian, and one guy might be LDS, and one guy might be from Riverside, and one guy might be from Hawaii, and one guy might be from Salt Lake. How do you do that and still stay cohesive as a staff?
Yeah.
I mean, Rich Rodriguez has been with the same guys for 30 years. He's not doing this.
Yeah, it worked 10 years ago in West Virginia with those same guys. Mm-hmm. They were recruiting from like one pool in the West Virginia, greater West Virginia states area. And all those guys had connections, and it worked. Mm-hmm. He gets away from there, and suddenly it doesn't work.
Right.
Because they're recruiting from a different pool, right?
Right. Right. And it's interesting, the comings and goings on his staff in the last few years. Yes, you brought in Saren H., who recruits Texas, but Charlie Regal, who recruited Phoenix, and recruited Phoenix pretty, I mean, somewhat successfully,
yeah.
He leaves. He takes with him Miguel Ravelis, who is Mr. Orange County, or Inland Empire from Ontario, California. He was able to do that. You add a guy like a Davey Nodal, who's a new GA for them, Polynesian guy, but is that a high enough position? Can you recruit saying, well, we have one analyst who's Polynesian? I don't know.
I'm sure they exploit that to the most they can. I mean, they had a Polynesian summer camp here in June, maybe a little too late, and I'm sure Nodal was at the middle of it.
Hindsight is certainly 50-50 here, Greg. And it's easy to look back and say, well, that's where this all started. Is it possible that not keeping Joe Salovea on staff? You know where I'm going with
Yes.
this. Okay. He went to Pullman, Washington.
Yeah.
Pullman, Washington.
He went without a job for about 2 months.
He was able to get a kid, in theory here, to fly from Hawaii to Pullman, Washington, and play football there.
Yeah.
Could he have done that, if not more, with Arizona? A school that has more connections to that Polynesian community.
Yes.
His alma mater.
And he points to his lineage with those guys and how good Tucson had been with that kind of an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of them linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Rich Rod walks into the job and Joe Salovea is there. And I'm sure your first reaction is, oh, these are all the guys who got everybody fired.
Right.
Why should we keep this guy?
And Joe Salovea did not have a lot of coaching experience.
No.
It was 1 year at San Jose and 2 years at Arizona?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, he wasn't the guy. In retrospect, you go, boy, he's got some value.
And if you're Rich Rodriguez getting off the plane from Michigan, have you thought for 5 seconds about recruiting the Polynesian community?
You would have to say he had not, because he did not.
Right. Right.
And it's really haunted him. Say they had just 4 good Polynesian players, most of them linemen or linebackers now. That would make so much difference.
They did under Mike Stoops.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Mike Stoops, again, Joe Salovea, yes, but he did not recruit. He did not have a Polynesian assistant. He had Robert and I.
He had Mike Tuiasosopo.
And Mike Tuiasosopo. So he did. So Mike Stoops even did it. I mean, and you could look down the list. I mean, Arizona had more Tui Halamakas than Rich Rod has Polynesian players of any last.
Yeah, time. Yeah, exactly.
And you can go down the list. I mean, whether it's Conan Amatuanai or, the Tui Halamakas, Fish Finene went on his mission. They had a bunch of guys. See, to me, that's what's so fascinating. And recruiting, now that I no longer have to think about recruiting for a living, I sleep better. Greg, I'm happier. Recruiting is a terrible thing to follow and track because it all changes so fast. But it's really interesting to me, not the kids themselves, but the kinds of kids you need to build a good roster and a good team at a place like the University of Arizona. As you saw UTEP, Arizona is further along than the UTEPs of the world. But as we see with Utah this week, Utah has a recruiting identity where Arizona may not.
Yeah, and that's the whole, that's the reason why Arizona is in a pickle. Mm-hmm. Pickle is probably a kind word to use, because they haven't recruited well, and it can all be traced to that. You can't really say they haven't coached well because nobody knows if mm-hmm. they've coached well.
I think he's an Rich is a very good in-game coach.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when Mike Stoops was here, and I hate to keep making these two comparisons, but it's Mike Stoops was the coach I cover. Mike Stoops' record when trailing at halftime was something like 3-30. His record when leading at halftime was something like 30-3. Something like, wow. You know what I mean. Rich Rodriguez, I think, makes in-game adjustments as well as any coach they had. In his first year, we were all very surprised at how they were able to kind of be resilient and battle back, where in, with the old Stoops teams, it felt like when you were down, you were going to lose, and when you were up, you were going to win.
I hadn't thought of that.
But you can't do it with, no offense, Utah State-level players.
Yeah.
I mean, you need Pac-12 guys, and I'm not sure how many Pac-12 guys are on this team right now.
We're about to find out. We're about to find out if Scotty Young is good, mm-hmm. if Tony Fields is good, Kylan Wilborn, if he's good, all these freshmen who we've never seen before.
Colin Schooler got compared to Scooby Wright 2 days ago because he played well against who? Who? Northern Arizona and Utah?
Bingo, that's the line of this whole podcast. They beat Utah.
They beat Utah. UTEP may be awful. UTEP fired their coordinator the next morning.
Yeah.
But just because UTEP is awful doesn't necessarily mean Arizona's bad. You know, it's a tricky deal.
We'll find out in the next 2 weeks. Utah, Colorado, the teams that Arizona thought they might be able to step on for a long, long time in the South Division. Mm-hmm. Now they're both better than Arizona. If they get whacked by both of those schools 3 weeks from now when we're sitting here at this podcast, it's not going to be a positive conversation.
No. Greg, before we let you go here, give me a prediction. Tell me what happens. Arizona's a home underdog to Utah. Not to USC, but to Utah. Is that a fair assessment? And what happens on Friday?
I actually think Arizona will hang in there. Depends on Brandon Dawkins, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's Utah's got a new guy who's played against three really bad teams. Huntley.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a Heisman Trophy winner. Of course he's not, but Brandon Dawkins in two games looked like a Heisman Trophy winner, and I think it'll be a really close game. But Utah's got the best kicking game in the league and always has, and Arizona's never distinguished itself with kicking.
Here's my 45-second sidebar here. When you're a school like Arizona or like Utah, you need to have an identity. And when you're a school like them, you need to do the little things well because maybe that'll steal you a game or two a year. Utah has gone all in on special teams. All in. I mean, not just Tom Hackett and the kicker who they had. What's his name?
Andy Phillips.
It's not just Tom Hackett and Andy Phillips. Their return game was great. They remind me a lot of the 1990s Arizona teams.
1980 Arizona teams, too.
Right, where you sit there and you go, they can't be that good. They're not a brand name. And you go, oh, no, but Arizona was the winningest team in the Pac-10 in the 90s because they played defense and were good on special teams. Utah's the same way.
And isn't it amazing? They had the best kicker in the country, mm-hmm. Tom Hackett. And now they have another one who's the best in the country.
Again, that's that subculture, though. My guess is they have an assistant coach who's dialed into that, who will get them every good snapper, kicker, punter.
They flew, to New Zealand to get Hackett? They flew down there to get him.
I know.
Usually you just invite him to show up.
I know. You know what Tom Hackett's doing now?
No.
He's a member of the media. He hosts a radio show in Salt Lake City.
I'm stunned. Well, I looked for his name this week in the NFL. I thought, isn't he kicking for somebody?
Greatest punter I've ever seen.
Yeah.
All right, so before we go, give me a score.
I'm saying Utah 31, Arizona 27.
Arizona scores 27 on Utah's front four, huh?
I think they'll get, because they're home, I think they'll get one drive or one play that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Awesome. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast. Greg Hansen, thank you for joining me. Thank you for trying to explain some of this Utah stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I think it's going to be, especially compared to UTEP, this is like the Super Bowl.
What's your score?
I think it's close. I think it's something like 24-21. And maybe who wins that game is determined by who can do more on special teams. Arizona special teams have been okay. Sean Brown is somebody who's pretty good. Sean Brown hasn't faced a special teams unit like Utah's yet, though. So
Booby, is he as good as Booby?
I don't think so. Yeah. What do you think?
He looks pretty good on TV. I've seen him three times this year.
Yeah, that spin move was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
the Shun Brown thing is pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. All right. Well, next week when we are talking, we will talk about Colorado coming up. Well, there's a bye week. Will we take a bye?
U of A basketball media day is next week.
Bam. We'll talk U of A basketball because it's somehow basketball season, even though it's September. And we will reflect on Friday night's game. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.